slipping, falling, helping each other up. I'd never tried ice skating, but had always thought it looked like fun. I had once watched a reality TV program where celebrities learned to skate. I'd thought I'd love to give it a go if I ever got the chance, and here I was. It was almost as if this place knew my secret thoughts and wishes, even the things I'd never said out loud, and somehow brought them to life. But surely that wasn't possible. It must have been a coincidence. Either way, I had about 2 seconds to figure out how to skate before I caused a massive pile-up in the middle of the rink. I stretched out a leg, then the other, and somehow, with barely any effort, I slid smoothly forwards. I was doing it. I could skate. I glided across the ice. I skated forwards, backwards, spun in circles. It was as if I'd been doing it all my life. It was amazing. This was so much fun, smiling at everyone who passed me, reaching out to take their hands so we could skate together, in time with the music that seemed to be coming from all around us. I wished I could share it with... What was his name? I skated along more nervously now. What was happening to me? I couldn't remember anyone's names. I had a very vague recollection of friends, parents, teachers, a boyfriend, but they were hazy memories, like shadows, reflections, outlines, not real. Your wrist. Look at your wrist. Something in my brain was urging me to pay attention. I pulled up my sleeve and looked at my wrist. I was wearing a watch. Funny, the time was going backwards. 10:41 and 54 seconds. 53. 52. 51. Why was my watch going backwards? Something about it was familiar, but I couldn't remember what it was. The other wrist. I rolled my other sleeve up, and the truth slammed into me, just as I slammed into the edge of the rink. Aaron's chain. My boyfriend. Back in... Where was he? Where was I? What was I doing here? I stumbled off the ice rink. The moment I did, it disappeared behind me, as if it had never been there. Suddenly I was in a square with trees and stalls all around me. People bustling about, laughing, chatting, nodding and smiling at each other. Smells wafted from each stall. Oranges, roses, popcorn, candy floss, every beautiful and delicious smell you could think of. Suddenly I was desperate for some popcorn.
There you go, darling.
A man handed me a bag without me even asking. Too stunned to refuse, and it smelt like the freshest, sweetest popcorn I'd ever had in my life, I took it from him and sat down on a bench in front of a fountain. I'd been warned that Atlantis was magical and dazzling, but I hadn't expected it to be this magical or this bizarre. The popcorn. Wow! It was scrumptious. Wait, who told me about Atlantis? Something was scratching at my mind. Someone had told me about it. Lyle, that was it. Of course. I suddenly remembered why I was here. I had a job to do. As I ate, I pulled out the sheets of paper from my pocket and studied them. To be honest, all I really wanted was to enjoy the moment, but I knew I had to stay strong and remember why I was here. I forced myself to read while I ate my popcorn. I memorized the faces once again. Then I folded the papers back into my pocket and looked around. There were people everywhere. The ones I wanted to find surely had to be here somewhere, didn't they? My head was spinning with faces and names and sights and smells, and way too much information. I had to clear my head. I turned to the fountain, cupped my hands and filled them with water. I closed my eyes as I splashed the water over my head and face. It was just what I needed. Cool and refreshing. That was better. That was... Wait, where had the sounds gone? I opened my eyes. The square had disappeared. I was sitting alone on a rock at the edge of a river. my hands still wet from the water. I staggered to my feet. This place was crazy. How would I ever find anyone here if I couldn't even find my way around? I rolled up my sleeve. No matter what else happened, I decided I had to keep the chain within sight at all times. I'd make myself look at it constantly, force myself to remember. I looked down at my brooch, too, for good measure. Between them, Shona and Aaron had done all they could to keep me safe. The rest was up to me. I checked my watch. 10:28. 10 and a half hours to go. Over an hour and a half had already passed, and I was getting nowhere fast. The cool water had at least cleared my head. I glanced around me, pulled myself up from the rock, and set off towards some stepping stones that led across the river. As I stepped onto the bridge, I promised myself I wouldn't let myself get sucked in again. Atlantis could try to mess with my head as much as it liked. I wasn't giving up. I'd find the passengers of Prosperous too. I'd bring them all home. I had a job to do, and I wasn't prepared to fail. Chapter 17. I crossed the bridge and then watched as the river turned into a country lane. I followed the lane, turned a corner, and found myself in the middle of a ballroom, filled with sparkling chandeliers on the ceiling and glowing candlelight coming from every corner. At one end of the room, a huge orchestra was playing. I stood and watched for a moment. A second later, a man in a penguin suit had taken my hand and started waltzing me across the floor. We spun round and round on the dance floor. I closed my eyes and laughed out loud. When I opened them again, I was in a carriage on a waltzer fairground ride. Gasping, I blinked and looked around me as the world spun by. Another blink, and suddenly I was at the top of a roller coaster ride. I looked down and saw a city full of the highest skyscrapers. Moments later, I was zooming down into a tunnel that brought me out into a valley full of birdsong and wild flowers. Every passage took me somewhere even more wonderful and exciting than the last place. Every blink of my eye changed the view. Every door led me into a new land. Every thought I had brought itself to life in front of me. Amongst all of this were throngs of smiling, happy people, but still none that I recognized. I sat on a cloud that turned into a giant beanbag at the top of a helter-skelter that had moments earlier been a staircase, and tried to get my bearings. I checked my watch. 8:41. Over 3 hours gone already. Time was disappearing like sand slipping through my fingers. I was starting to panic. I could feel it in my chest, in my thoughts, under my skin. Every bit of me was prickling with question marks and anxiety. I no longer had a plan, no longer had any idea how to get out of this, or the confidence that I could do it at all. How would I ever find anyone here, when I was almost losing myself? How could I even get from one part of the city to the next, when every thought I had turned to... Wait. My thoughts had been making things happen. The marshmallows, the diamonds sprinkling the water, the waltz becoming a waltzer. Maybe I could do that with the people, too. Think about them, and they would appear. It had to be worth a try. I clambered out of the beanbag, which turned into an old English sheepdog, sighed, curled up and went to sleep, grabbed a Hessian bag, sat down on it, and pushed myself down the helter-skelter. As I whizzed down and down and round, I closed my eyes and went through the list of people in my mind, picturing their faces one by one. Round the helter-skelter I went, wind in my hair, eyes closed, until... Whoops! Ouch! I had landed in the middle of a spongy green field, right at someone's feet.
"I'm so sorry,"
a voice said, as a hand reached down to help me up.
"Are you okay?"
"Yes, I'm fine. My fault. Sorry," I garbled, as I brushed my legs down and scrambled to my feet. Then I looked up at him. He was vaguely familiar. Was he one of the Prosperous Two passengers? Had I found them? Had it worked?
"Are you sure you're all right?"
the man asked again.
"You seem quite shaken. Here, come and sit down."
He pointed to the edge of the field. There was a gate, with a wooden bench on the other side. We went through the gate. It led us back into the busy square, or one very similar to it. The man didn't seem puzzled by the change of scene. He simply sat on a bench in the centre of the square and indicated for me to do the same.
"You look as if you've seen a ghost," he said.
"Ha!" I said, trying to stop myself from getting hysterical. "Ha!" The man looked at me quizzically. As he did, I noticed a scar above his left eye. Yes, he was definitely one of the people from the ship. I was sure of it. He was standing up to go.
"Well, if you're sure you're okay,"
he began. "No, wait!" I reached into my pocket and grabbed my sheet of names and faces whilst the man sat back down. I ran my finger down the list. He was there. Wavy grey hair, yellow cardigan, green eyes, scar on the left-hand side of his forehead. It was him. "One second," I urged, as I hurriedly scanned the information beside the picture. He was called Tony Mason. He was 57, and he had a wife called Olivia. She and Tony had just celebrated their silver wedding anniversary. That was why they'd booked the holiday. But Olivia had fallen ill a week before the holiday, so he had come with his daughter, Charlotte, instead. There was a photo of Olivia on my sheet. Tony was looking around, tapping his fingers on his knees and smiling as a juggler passed by on a unicycle. I glanced up to watch for a moment. The juggler had about 15 cones all passing in perfect circles through his hands as he cycled. Impossible. Amazing. It was so easy to get distracted here. I forced myself to concentrate. "Mr. Mason," I said quietly. He kept on watching the juggler. I cleared my throat. "Tony," I said more firmly. He stopped watching the juggler and turned to me.
"How do you know my name?"
he asked.
"We haven't already met, have we? I'm sure I..."
No, we haven't. You don't know me at all, but actually, I don't know you either." Tony laughed.
"Well, that's a good start,"
he said.
"Anyway, I'm always happy to make a new friend. Are you here with your parents?"
I shook my head. "Alone." Tony frowned.
"Well, that's terrible. We must look after you. I'll see if I can find..."
"No, I'm fine," I cut him short.
"Oh, okay."
Tony looked shocked. I guessed people didn't interrupt each other in Atlantis. "Sorry," I went on. "It's just, I don't need your help. I've come to help you." Tony stared at me for 2 seconds, then burst out laughing.
"Help me?"
he asked. He held his arms out, as if to encompass the square, the fields, the whole island.
"How on earth might I be in need of any help? I have everything I could desire."
I swallowed. Could I do it? Did I have any choice? "No, you haven't," I said.
"I beg your pardon?"
"You haven't got Olivia," I told him.
"I haven't got who?"
he asked, his eyes twinkling as if we were sharing a joke. I opened up the sheet and held it out to him, pointing at the picture of Olivia. "Your wife!" Tony's eyes twinkled for approximately another nanosecond. Then he took the paper from me. He held it close to his face, then at arm's length. Then he looked at me. Jumping away from the bench as if it was suddenly on fire, he whispered,
"Where are you from?"
His face had drained of colour.
"Where am I?"
he asked, turning in a circle as he scanned the square.
"What is this place? What's happened to Olivia?"
I didn't know where to start with his questions. Each one could take an hour to answer properly in itself, and we didn't have that kind of time. "Do you remember her?" I asked instead. "Do you remember your wife?"
"Yes, yes, of course I remember her. We were coming away to celebrate our silver wedding."
Tony flopped back onto the bench.
"It was going to be the trip of a lifetime,"
he went on.
"But then Olivia got sick, and she told me to come with Charlotte instead."
He nodded slowly as he talked, as his real life came back to him.
"There was an accident or something. I don't remember much about it. I was having an afternoon nap. Next thing I knew, I was waking up here."
"So you remember arriving here?" I asked. He nodded.
"As if it was last week."
I decided not to point out that it actually was last week.
"We've been here over 6 months now,"
he went on.
"Probably closer to 7. We've made it our home. The only home I thought I had."
Tony turned scared eyes on me.
"I abandoned my wife. Charlotte and I forgot all about her. Spent our time laughing and joking and eating fine food. And all the time, poor Olivia."
He shook his head as if to beat away his words.
"All that time,"
he whispered.
"She must be beside herself with worry."
"It hasn't been months," I said. He needed to know the truth. "It's been 6 days." Tony snorted.
"I wish it had been, but you're wrong. We have a whole life here. We have..."
"Time works differently in Atlantis," I interrupted. "Everything works differently here." He stopped, mouth open, and stared at me. "Look, one thing about time is that we don't have enough of it for me to explain properly," I told him. "But trust me, I'm here to help you get back."
"To Olivia?"
"Yes, if you want to."
"Of course I want to. As long as Charlotte can come too."
"I'm hoping that everyone from Prosperous 2 will come too."
"Right, good. Just tell me what I need to do."
I reached into my pocket for the other pieces of paper and held them out for him. "Do you know any of these people? They were on the ship with you." Tony took a bundle of paper from me and flicked through it.
"I know all of them,"
he said.
"You've got the crew here as well as the passengers."
"The paperwork should have them all. We need to find them and get them back to the ship."
"What if they don't want to come back?"
"If you just tell them about it, they probably won't want to. They'll be like you were. They'll think this is their home and that they're happy here. They won't have any desire to leave, and we can't force them."
"But when they realize they're living in a dream world, they'll want to come back,"
he asked. "Not just that, but the dream is going to end really soon." I explained about the 6 days, how at the end of them, they would be gone forever, how their time ended for good at the end of today.
"Then we haven't got a moment to lose."
Tony held up the papers.
"We show them these?"
"Yes. We need to remind them of their families, tell them their names, show them the photos. All it takes is a glimpse of home, and hopefully they will remember everything. If you can help me find them, I'm happy to do the talking."
"Of course, let's do it."
Tony was still flicking through the papers.
"Wait, there's one missing,"
he said.
"The young woman, Luena. She's not here."
"No, she's different." Tony tilted his head to the side.
"Do you know, I thought she was. I didn't remember her from the ship, but when I woke up here, she was amongst us. After the first few days, I didn't question it. We'd all been sucked into Atlantis by then. But why no paperwork for her?"
I put my hand in my pocket and felt for the snow globe Lyle had given me. It was still there. Closing my hand around it, I replied, "I'll look after her, if I can find her."
We'll find her. We'll find them all. Come on.
Tony folded up the paper I'd given him and put it in his pocket. Don't do that, I said.
Don't do what?
I pointed at his pocket. Keep it in your hand. You have to keep on looking at it.
Why's that?
If you don't, you'll forget again. Tony laughed.
Forget Olivia again? Never.
You'll be surprised. The magic of Atlantis is incredibly strong. Please don't risk it. Tony squinted at me for a moment before nodding in agreement and pulling the paper out of his pocket.
Okay,
he said, unfolding it and glancing at his wife's photo again.
I won't take anything for granted. Come on, I want to find my daughter.
Good, and we need to be quick, I said. I checked my watch. 8:17. Just over 8 hours left. Almost a third of the time had gone already, and I'd only found one passenger. The ship needs to leave in the next 8 hours, or it will never get away. Tony was already hurrying.
I know where most of them hang out. We'll find them.
As we hurried across the square, a question repeated itself over and over in my mind. Did we really stand a chance of winning this race against time? But as we dipped through archways and walls that became tunnels through mountains, skipped over rivers on stepping stones made of giant pearls, edged across bridges that turned into trampolines, and raced along cobbled streets that twisted and turned like giant writhing snakes, I knew one thing. The alternative didn't bear thinking about. Chapter 18. Tony was true to his word. He knew where most of the passengers were. An hour later, we'd found 9 passengers and most of the crew, including the captain of the ship. There were just 3 passengers and 1 crew member still to find, and Luena. We hadn't explained anything yet either. Tony had just told everyone to come with us, and that it was important. We stopped for a break on a piece of headland, overlooking a wide pink beach and a sparkling blue bay.
Dad, are you going to explain what's going on yet?
Tony's daughter, Charlotte, asked. Tony glanced at me and I nodded. He passed the papers around and then, between us, we explained everything. I told them about Atlantis, about them being here because they were lost at sea, about what would happen at the end of today, and how this was their only chance to get away. I watched their faces as one by one the truth of their wonderful lives in Atlantis dawned, and they remembered their old lives, their real lives. As soon as they'd got over the shock of the truth, they wanted to find the other passengers and set sail as soon as possible. At least, most of them did. A young man who hadn't spoken yet put up his hand.
What is it, Alan?
Tony asked. Alan waved his piece of paper at us and shrugged.
What if I don't want to leave?
He asked.
Don't want to leave?
Tony repeated incredulously.
Have you been listening for the last half an hour? Do you know where you are? Do you remember your old life? Your real life?
Alan shrugged again.
Yes, on all counts, he said flatly.
He held up the photo on his piece of paper.
And yes, I completely remember the day my fiancé walked out on me. It was the same month that I lost my job, and a couple of days after our home was repossessed.
No one spoke for a moment. The air stilled and tightened. Eventually, as softly as a summer breeze, Alan added,
Why would I want to go back to that?
One of the women went over to Alan and stroked his arm.
That's awful, she said. You poor thing.
Thanks, Jenna,
Alan mumbled. Tony frowned.
Alan, Atlantis isn't what you think. It's...
Alan shook his head.
I'm sorry, guys. You go if you like. I'm staying here.
I looked at Tony. Could we let Alan stay when we had the chance to help him get away? A chance that, according to Lyle, had virtually never happened before. A chance to choose life.
Tony spoke softly.
"You're not staying," he said.
"I like it here," Alan insisted.
"I've never been so happy anywhere, never had so many friends, never..." "Where are your friends now, Alan?"
Tony asked.
"Not us, or the people who came here after us. Where are the ones who came before us?"
Alan stared at him.
"They..."
His face clouded with confusion.
"That's a thought,"
he murmured.
"Where have they gone?"
"My dad's right," Charlotte said. "The group from the eclipse, remember?
The ship that got here a week before us. Anyone seen any of them lately?"
One of the older men spoke up.
"None of those guys have been around for days, now I think about it,"
he said.
"What about the crew of that sailing ship? What was it called?"
Tony went on. "The Blue Typhoon," Charlotte offered.
"That's it,"
Tony replied.
"Where are they?"
"Gone. Those two canoeists, the guys from the racing yacht, the people from that posh cruise ship, all of them gone. No one who arrived before us is here anymore."
"But where are they then?"
Alan asked.
"What happened to them?"
Jenna cleared her throat.
"I think we all know in our hearts what happened to them. Think of the night the eclipse guys went. They were here that evening, probably at their most cheerful, all of them. Then later that night, the sky had a whole load more stars in it. Remember? We commented on it."
A few of the group nodded, remembering something that Atlantis had since made them forget.
"I can't be positive, but I reckon those stars were them,"
Jenna went on.
"All I know for sure is that the next morning they were gone. Maybe there was some dust on the ground. Maybe an extra flower bloomed that day for each of them. I don't know. All I do know is that we never saw them again. The end of the road came for each of them, like it will come for us too."
"Jenna's right. The same thing happened when the canoeists went," Charlotte said.
"I'd completely forgotten, but I remember it now. Two bright stars came out that night, lit up the whole island for an hour or two."
"And at the end of today, you'll be the same," I said. "You won't get to stay here any more, any of you. You won't have the choice to try to go home. This is your only chance."
"You've heard her. In a few hours, it's game over,"
Tony said flatly.
"That's the truth of it. This here..."
He waved his arms across the headland, across the bay, the island, all of it.
"It's a holding place. We're nowhere. We're in between worlds."
"Man, it's an illusion. Come tonight. There's no more in between and no more Atlantis. You'll be gone, and that's the end of it. Alan, if you need me to spell it out for you, I will. At the end of today, time's up. You'll be dead."
Alan's face had drained of colour.
"So, your choice."
Tony stared at him.
"Are you coming with us, or are we leaving you here to die alone?"
Alan didn't speak for a moment. No one spoke. The air seemed to be stretched so tight, it felt as if it would splinter into pieces. Eventually, Alan muttered,
"I guess a rubbish life is better than no life at all."
I let out a breath. Thank goodness. I looked at my timer. 7:03. Almost 5 hours had passed. We had just 7 hours left. Tony went over and shook his hand.
"Good man. We'll look after you,"
he promised. "Right, come on," I said. "We need to find the others and get back to the ship." I know where Alex and Phil will be, one of the women said. There's a garden they always go to in the afternoons. And Gabby is Alex's best friend. She might be with them. If not, they'll probably know where to find her. I'll go and get them.
Great,
Tony said. He rifled through his papers and handed her three sheets.
Make sure you give them these.
And keep looking at the pictures of your own family on your way, I added. It's easy to forget here. Which, as I said it, reminded me. What about Luenna? I asked.
The captain came over to me.
I'll show you how to find her, he said. She's with Miriam, my final crew member. There's a park you can find when you know how. They'll be there.
Tony took charge.
Okay, great. The captain can go with Emily. Jeanette is fetching the others. Everyone else come with me. Get your stuff and we'll head back to the ship together. Let's all meet there, say, on the top deck in an hour.
Wait, I yelled. Tony had reminded me of the final essential detail. Everyone turned to look at me. There's one last thing, I said. You can't take anything with you. Anything you got in Atlantis, clothes, food, jewellery, whatever it is, you must leave it behind.
Why's that?
A young woman asked. If you attempt to leave Atlantis with something of Atlantis, the ship won't be able to get away, I explained. As I said the words, I remembered that they applied to me too. I pulled the garland from around my head, realizing as I did so that it hadn't just been a gift to make me smile. It had been a way of helping to root me in Atlantis, to ease the transition, take away any memories that would remind me of what I'd lost, and keep me here.
Things like this, I said. Anything that comes from here, you have to leave it behind.
Darn it. That blows my idea of taking presents back for the grandkids,
one of the older men mumbled.
Their present will be seeing their grandparents return alive, Louis, his wife replied, nudging him and pointing at the beautiful gold watch on his arm. That was from here, too. Off it comes.
Just leave it all here, Tony said. Someone else will have a nice treat when they go for a walk on the headland.
I unclasped my diamond bracelet and put it on the ground. As I did, I sent a wish with it, that it would bring someone a feeling of warmth and happiness in their final days here. That it would bring a smile to the face of someone whose time really was up. I checked my timer. 6:47. We still had nearly 7 hours. Okay, I said. Let's go. The captain and I left the square together. He told me to call him Phil.
I know a shortcut,
he said as he paced ahead. I had to run to keep up with him. We left the square behind us, and I followed him up a tiny, winding street. Like all the other roads, it was cobbled and quaint. On each side, gleaming white houses had wooden shutters and walls painted in pastel colours. They were so pretty that under any other circumstances, I would have wanted to take my time, strolling along and admiring each one. Phil broke into my thoughts.
Okay, are you ready for the shortcut?
He asked. I guess so, I replied, wondering why I had to be ready. I was just following him, wasn't I?
See that wall at the top of the road?
He asked. I looked ahead and saw that the road was blocked by a huge brick wall with a colourful mural painted on it. Oh, I stopped walking. Why are we going up here? It's a dead end.
Look at the wall,
Phil urged me.
What do you see?
I stared at the mural. A picture of a house with a ladder leaning against it. A man at the top of the ladder cleaning a window. I studied it further. Very lifelike, isn't it?
Exactly. That was what I thought when I first saw it. It's so lifelike that in fact...
Phil pointed at the wall.
You see the door right down at the bottom? Near the base of the ladder?
I looked where he was pointing. There was a bright red door with a gleaming brass handle. It was so bright, it could literally just have been painted that day.
I see it.
You have to grab that handle. It'll take you through.
But it's not a real handle. It's a painting, I protested.
Phil just looked at me.
And this is Atlantis,
he said, by way of explanation. He was right. Much weirder things than walking through a picture of a door in a wall had happened since I'd arrived here. We carried on walking.
You have to be confident. Walk up to the wall, reach out for the door handle, and it will come to life in your hand. As soon as you feel it tingle, turn it, and the door will open. Ready?
I guess. The captain stopped.
Hold on. I tried it with someone else the other day, and it didn't work. I went through, but my friend didn't.
You think it might not work for me either? He shook his head.
It's not that. I've tested it a few times. It will only let one person through. You go. I'll wait here for a few minutes. Make sure you've really gone. If you don't come back, I'll assume it's worked, and I'll see you back on the ship. Are you ready?
My heart quickened, not just from the fear of literally walking into a wall, but because of what was on the other side. Was I actually going to meet Luenna?
Yeah, I'm ready,
I said. And then I strode towards a brick wall, reached out for a picture of a brass handle, and walked straight through a door that a moment ago had been a few splashes of paint. I opened my eyes and gazed about me. I was surrounded by the most stunning beauty. To one side of me, a field of flowers spread in swirling patterns as far as I could see. Bright red, deep blue, dazzling yellow, clear white. They were everywhere. The air was full of their scent, too. It smelled as though someone had invented the ultimate perfect perfume. On the other side of me, a bridge emerged from the wild flowers to cross a river that danced and sparkled like the finest jewels. Behind me, what had been a wall was now a line of trees, the sun glinting in between their branches, as though they were full of dancing fairies. Ahead, the river opened up into a pool. Above it, the highest waterfall I'd ever seen snaked through rocks and trees, to fall into the water below in a shimmering curtain. Next to the pool, someone was lying on a rock in the sunshine. Luenna. I approached the pool, stepping carefully across the rocks till I reached the one she was lying on.
Luenna,
I whispered, reaching out to touch her shoulder. She stirred at my touch.
What? What's wrong?
She sat up, squinting into the sunlight. Then her eyes focused on me.
Who are you?
I'm Emily, I said simply. Wait. She reached out towards me, traced my face with her hand.
I know you, she whispered.
Don't I? I wasn't sure how to answer. Our previous meeting, touching palms across a porthole window, hadn't exactly been your average way of getting to know someone. I got as far as, when she went on. Kneeling up on the rock, she squinted as she stared at me.
You're familiar, but I can't think where from. You're not from Atlantis, are you?
I realized how to answer her questions. I didn't need words. I had something that would do a better job than any explanation I could give her. I reached into my pocket and pulled out the snow globe from Lyle. As I held it out towards her, Luenna gasped and covered her mouth with her hands. Then she gently took the globe from me.
No, I don't believe it. Surely it can't be.
She lowered her head, gripping the snow globe tightly, as if it were a long-lost family heirloom. As I watched her, I saw a tear drip onto it from her face. I awkwardly reached out to her.
Are you okay?
I asked, touching her arm. Luenna nodded and looked up at me. She wiped her wet cheek with the back of her hand.
"It's just a shock to realize that it happened to me," she said. "We always thought we were immune."
"From Atlantis?" Luenna nodded.
"How long has it been?" she asked urgently. "In your world, how long?"
The day you disappeared was last Friday."
"So last Friday was day one?"
I nodded. "This is day 6. Luenna turned as white as the froth from the waterfall behind her.
"Day 6?
I nodded. "Lyle said after today..."
"I know."
Luenna held a hand up to stop me. Her face had softened with emotion.
"My Lyle," she said huskily. "How is he?"
I thought about the state he'd been in all week. The sunken eyes, unwashed clothes, pale skin. But then I thought about the glimmer of hope he'd had this morning, when he came to see me off. Was it really only this morning? It felt like days ago. "He's fine," I said. "He wants you home."
"I tried so hard," she said. "The ship was in bad shape when we arrived. To be honest, it took me at least the first day to recover from the shock that I had come through with it."
"Do you know why you did?" I asked. Luenna took a breath and closed her eyes.
"I just know I got caught up in the earthquake. I was too close to the ship when it hit. I didn't stand a chance. None of us did."
Her voice cracked as she spoke. "I'm sorry. You don't have to talk about it," I said.
"No, it's good to talk about it. I need to remember."
She put her hand on my arm.
"Have we got much time?"
I glanced at my watch. 6:23. We had nearly 6.5 hours. "A little." Luenna motioned to a set of stepping stones that led across the river to the other side.
"Come on, let's talk as we walk. We need to go this way."
"What about Miriam?" I asked. "The captain said she'd be with you."
"That's where we're going now,"
Luenna replied as she reached out to help me across the rocks.
"We'll pick her up on the way."
Then she pointed at my wrist, at my chain from Aaron.
"Is that your snow globe?"
she asked. "Yeah, I guess."
"Good. It's important."
"I know.
So go on,"
I said, as I hopped from the rocks to the other side of the river. "What happened next? After you got here?"
"The ship was badly broken up," she went on as we walked. "Because of my work, I knew that we had a matter of days to fix things before we would stop wanting to... before Atlantis drew us in. Most of the others left even before that, completely bewitched by the magic of Atlantis. Some stayed behind with me, but then they gradually drifted away."
"So you tried to fix the ship?"
"Tried is the word, yes. The engines were damaged, but I managed to get a few volunteers to help mend the sails. Once we'd done that, we made our first attempt to get back. But we failed."
Their first attempt? That would have been one of the times we'd seen them from Five Bays Island.
"My companions weren't strong enough to keep trying, though,"
Luenna went on.
"Certainly not strong enough to counter the magic that Atlantis was weaving around us. I was soon fighting a losing battle. Except with the captain."
"Phil? Why was he different?"
"That's what I kept asking myself. My best guess was that he was a sea-going man who'd worked on ships all his life. Perhaps he'd built up some kind of immunity. I don't know. I just know that he held out longer against Atlantis."
"But not long enough."
"No. We worked together for, I don't know how long. We made a couple more attempts to escape. The sails were too weak to get us far, but we'd started to fix the engines. They were working intermittently. Meanwhile, I spent every waking hour working on my calculations for our course home. We were so close."
"So what happened?"
"Phil succumbed like the others. He fought it, told me to remind him of his wife and kids, which I did regularly. But in the end, my words weren't enough.
No, you need something you can see or touch, like a photo. I held up my wrist. Or like this. Luenna studied me.
You've done a lot of homework, haven't you?
I shrugged. Lyle did most of it. She nodded.
Anyway, that's about it. Once the captain was gone, and I was the only one left to try to get us home, the job was almost impossible. Soon after that, I lost my way. I was the only one still on the ship. I grew desperate, scared.
That's probably when I saw you, I said. Luenna stopped.
Yes, she whispered. I remember everything now. You were at the window. You were outside the porthole.
I nodded. That was how I knew you hadn't gone for good.
I wasn't far off. It wasn't much later that I succumbed to Atlantis too.
She held her arms out wide.
You've got to admit, it's hard to resist.
Luenna reached out and squeezed my hand. Then, almost echoing Lyle's words, she said,
You know I will never be able to thank you enough for this, don't you?
I haven't done anything yet, I said. The hardest part is still ahead of us.
You're right. We need to get going. We haven't got long.
I checked my watch. 5:52. Less than 6 hours left. Time was running out so fast.
No, we haven't got long at all.
Luenna quickened her pace.
Have you got all the others?
I nodded. Hopefully, the others will all be there by the time we get back to the ship.
Just us and Miriam to go, then?
Luenna replied as she led the way into a copse of trees.
Come on, she'll be round here.
I followed Luenna into the trees. Leaves crinkled beneath us as we walked. The birdsong under the trees was like an orchestra of pipe music. It was heavenly. Ahead of us, a woman was pacing back and forth. She had something held against her shoulder.
Miriam!
Luenna called out. The woman turned. As she did, I could see what she was holding. A baby! Miriam has a baby! I asked. Luenna laughed, her eyes lighting up and dancing in a way I hadn't seen until now.
The baby isn't Miriam's, she said, as she reached out her arms and Miriam passed the bundle to her. Miriam was helping out so I could have a sleep. The baby is mine.
I stared at the tiny little face with eyes that were shut tight, a scrunchy little nose and frowning, twitching mouth.
Mine and Lyle's,
Luenna added.
This is our baby girl.
I didn't know you had a baby, I said, staring into its little face. Lyle didn't tell me. Luenna paused.
Lyle didn't know, she said quietly.
But how?
I was going to tell him that night. I had a whole celebration planned,
Luenna said dreamily. That night? Last week?
Last week for you, yes. For me, it was nearly 7 months ago.
She's 10 days old. I let out a breath. It was one thing being told that time worked differently in Atlantis, but to see proof like this, well, that just blew me away. It did another thing, too. It made me even more determined to make this work. Lyle had a daughter, and he didn't even know it. We had to get Luenna and her baby back home where they belonged. We had to. I leaned over to take a closer look at the baby. As I did, she opened her eyes and gurgled at me. What's her name? Luenna grimaced.
She doesn't have a name yet. I know, it's terrible. Even though I was losing sight of my real life, I think a part of me was holding on to it strongly enough to believe that I would get back there one day, and I didn't want to name her until she'd met her daddy. It felt wrong somehow. I call her my treasure.
I reached out a finger to stroke the baby's face. I understand, I said, and she's going to meet her daddy. I'll make sure of it. Luenna smiled at me.
Come on, she said softly. Let's go join the others. We can explain everything to Miriam on the way back to the ship.
As the three of us walked, as I passed Miriam a sheet of paper with a picture of her own sons on it, and as Luenna and I explained our plans, my determination grew stronger and stronger. We had just over 5 hours to do it, but nothing would stop us now. We were getting away from Atlantis tonight. Chapter 19. It wasn't working. Luenna, Miriam, the baby and I had got back to the ship as fast as we could and met up with the others on the top deck. After a final roll call to check that everyone was on board, we'd got down to work. The captain had a few more nuts and bolts to adjust, things he hadn't fixed before he'd lost himself to Atlantis. He spent about an hour down on the lower deck with a couple of other men, and between them, they got the engines going again. Meanwhile, Luenna put all her navigational charts in order and plotted the complicated route home. The passengers had pulled up all the ropes, closed all the doors, fastened down everything loose, tidied up the spillages and mayhem all around the ship. The engines were in working order. This was it. We were ready to leave. But we weren't going anywhere. The ship wouldn't budge. We even tried hoisting the sails. Nothing. We all gathered on the top deck, all except the captain. He was still inside, trying to get us going.
"What's the matter? Why aren't we moving?" one of the women asked.
An older lady with white hair, she was on the ship with her husband. He was next to her.
"Have we checked the anchor?" she asked. "It's not stuck, is it?"
"We've checked the anchor, Ruth," Luenna replied. "It's not that, and it's not the sails or the engine either. I've charted our route. We all know it's going to be a complicated journey, and not one that many would manage to follow, but we've put all the coordinates into the computers, and our captain is one of the best there is. We should be on our way. I don't know what's stopping us."
I checked my countdown watch. 3:37. Less than a third of the time I'd started with. How had that happened so quickly? I could feel a flickering in my body, as though a panicked fish was flapping about inside my stomach.
"Are you all absolutely positive you've not brought anything back to the ship from Atlantis?" I asked. "Gifts for your family? Little trinkets? Jewellery? Anything?"
"We've checked all the cabins and all the communal spaces and there's nothing anywhere,"
one of the men, Charlie, said.
"Anything we found was either left behind on the island or has been thrown from the ship." "We've even frisked each other to make sure there's nothing in our clothes," added Tony.
"It doesn't make sense. We should be moving," Luenna mused. She jiggled the baby as she talked, staring out to sea and murmuring as she thought aloud.
"The ship's fixed, the route is mapped. We've nothing here from Atlantis."
And then, as I watched her bounce her beautiful baby on her hip, it hit me. The moment it did, I wished with all my might that I was wrong, but I knew I wasn't.
"You have..."
My voice came out as a croak.
"Huh?"
Luenna turned to me. The baby gurgled as she moved. I cleared my throat.
"You have something from Atlantis," I said, forcing unwelcome words out through an unwilling throat.
I kept my eyes focused on Luenna. As she gazed back at me, I saw the truth dawn in her eyes. Luenna's face drained of colour.
"No," she whispered. "No."
Wrapping both arms so tightly around her baby, I was almost afraid she'd squash her. She stood there, shaking her head and repeating the word over and over again.
"No, no, no, no."
Miriam came over to Luenna and put a hand on her arm.
"What is it?"
she asked. "What's wrong?" Luenna carried on shaking her head. Tears fell from her face onto the bundle in her arms.
"It's the baby," I said hoarsely.
"We don't understand," Miriam insisted. "What about the baby?"
"She was born here,"
Luenna cried. Her voice was like the howl of an injured animal.
"She's from Atlantis. As long as she is on the ship, we can never escape."
I wasn't sure how long we stood in silence after that. Actually, I had a fairly reasonable guess. My countdown watch was saying 3:16, just over 3 hours to go, and we had discovered a problem I had no idea how to solve. I wasn't sure that there could be a solution.
"I'm not leaving her behind,"
Luenna said, clutching her baby tightly to her chest.
"I'm not leaving her."
One of the other younger women came forward and put an arm round Luenna's shoulders.
"No one is suggesting you leave her behind," she reassured her. "No one would even think of it."
"Sally, I know, but then we can never get away," Luenna said.
"Unless," she paused.
"Unless you go without me."
"We'll stay here. I've given the captain everything he needs to get back.
You can do it."
"You're not staying behind," I said. "You know that after today, there will never be a way back."
I thought of Lyle's pale, grey face, his dark eyes, the hope I'd seen in them when he waved me off.
"You're not staying behind," I repeated more firmly.
"But there's no other way," Luenna insisted. "Better for you to leave us behind than for everyone to be stuck here forever."
"There must be another way," I insisted. "There has to be."
My brain was working double time. There was something here, a solution. I could sense it, almost feel it, itching the corners of my mind. Numbers, hours, baby, portal. I could feel Luenna beside me as I thought, her baby in her arms, rocking her, soothing her, whispering comforting thoughts, when really she was the one who needed comforting.
"You know it's strange," she said as she looked at her baby. She's always had this little worried look on her face, always a little frown. I thought it was just the shape of her face, but maybe it was this. Maybe somehow she knew. My baby knew all along. Knew we were doomed.
Luenna's voice broke, and her tears slipped down her cheek and onto the baby's head.
"Hey, shush now. Don't say things like that," Miriam murmured. "No one's doomed. We'll sort this out. We'll think of a solution."
Luenna shook her head.
"There is no solution," she cried.
"I can't bear it. My love for my husband and my love for my baby pulling me in opposite directions, and me torn into two pieces in between them."
"Wait, that was it. No one needs to stay behind," I said. "We can all get back home. I've got an idea." Everyone hushed and came closer as I explained my plan. "There's a portal. That's how I got here. It will open again in," I checked my watch, 2:51, "less than 3 hours. It will stay open for as long as the slack tide and the dusk are in tune."
"How long is that?"
the man asked. "I don't know. A matter of minutes. You lose track of time when you're going through the portal."
"Makes about as much sense as everything else round here,"
one of the men mumbled.
"Exactly," I agreed. "All I know is that I was thrown about in a swirling tunnel of lights and electricity and..."
I glanced at Luenna. She was holding the baby even closer. I decided she didn't need too much description of the journey. "Anyway, there isn't long... but there's long enough."
"Long enough for what?"
Ruth asked. "To get back," I said.
"You mean you're not going to come with us on the ship?"
she asked. I shook my head. "It's not for me, or at least, it was.
I looked at Luenna again. I could see she knew where I was going.
You'd let us